station from around the nation. It's the 411 with Sharon and Kay. What a way to make your day. Sharon and Kay is on the way. It's the 411 with Sharon and Kay. It's about newsmakers, movers and shakers, inspiration from around the nation. It's the 411 with Sharon and Kay. What a way to make your day. Sharon and Kay is on the way.
Hi, this is Sheriff Darren Hall, and I enjoy listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay, my favorite talk show host.
I am so glad. Hello, Nashville. All of our wonderful people. I know you're like, hey, wait a minute, it's Wednesday, Sharon Kay, it's not raining. I know, I'm saying the same thing. But it is coming later today. It is. Anyway, I hope that your day is going in the right direction. For some of you, that's outbound. For some of you, it's desk bound. But whichever direction it's going in, may it all be pleasant and a little bit in your direction. Now, we have a lot to get to today, as usual, on the Wednesday Take You Home edition of the 411 Show. Let's see, I got a couple headlines. You know, this early voting starts Friday and everything. And it seems like we have been doing a whole lot of voting in the last year or so. And the citizens still feel like they can't get what they want. But anyway, let me not get on that subject at this minute. And this book, I was looking forward to having this one on in particular because I know that there are some folks in relationships that have had this issue.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The title is Intimate Lies and the Law. When they have hooked up with somebody and that person took advantage of them financially.
Ooh.
Now, you know people, that you know folks that have had, Lord, they ain't nothing worse than that. And they married you and told you they loved you and you was beautiful. And then, bam, you was broke. He took all your money. You all know some folks out there. Y'all know. But anyway, and some men, they know, too. Because there's, you know, it hustles on both sides of the aisle. And I'm looking forward to the discussion in about 15 minutes with the author and the guest, distinguished professor in law, Jill Elaine Hasday, and we'll be talking about her recently released book, and Intimacy and Deception Are Often Entangled. People deceive to lure someone into a relationship or to keep her there, to drain an intimate's bank account, or to use her to acquire government benefits, to control an intimate, or to resist domination, or to capture myriad other advantages. And see, I'm talking to you, Nash Bell. You all know I'm talking to you. No subject is immune from deception in dating, sex, marriage, and family life. Intimates can lie, cheating and lying, or otherwise intentionally mislead each other about anything and everything. And you know the lawyer knows. Because they have heard some lies and probably told some. But anyway, I'm looking forward to having this discussion about her new book. There's some interesting, extremely interesting subject in here that we will be delving into in just a few minutes. Intimate Lies and the Law. So if you are in one of those relationships, or you know somebody, or you just want to run for cover, that's what this is about. Because nowadays, the catfish is catfishing, and, you know, it's all kind of, what do they call them? Nigerian princes trying to marry and give you a big checks and all uh-huh. that, and just go get me some cards yeah. at the store, and then I'll give you my fortune. But you don't have one. So, you know, I mean, it's a lot of that stuff going on. And all of a sudden, folks are crying, talking about, you know, I thought he loved me. Mm-hmm. Love what you had, but didn't love you. So that's what's coming up. Anyway, you know anybody that's ever gone through that, though?
Personally, no. Well, but cool. I have heard.
Yeah.
I've heard of people.
Mm-hmm. That have been taken down yeah. through there. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. It's really terrible.
And more so when the internet was newer mm-hmm. and people, you know, when those scams are brand new.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, those.
I want to marry you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before that, it was the check cashing thing.
Oh yeah,
where you deposit the check. So it's morphed into yeah. different. But I think that's been around for a while though. The one that you're discussing, that's nothing new.
Yeah, because this is relationships. Yeah,
and it's probably easier now. With
oh, it obvious. Is. That's yeah. that's the mm-hmm. difference. But here's what the author writes about: is that the law hasn't kept up with it.
Oh.
Which
okay.
is, you know, what oh. is the problem here?
The wheels of justice are turning slow.
They ain't even turning. I mean, really, it's totally. It almost seems like you're on your own. But we'll be finding out more about that here in just a couple of minutes. As I said, early voting gets underway on Friday. And I know many of you have the plan to go and participate in that. And through it continues through September 7th, and but it's closed on Labor Day.
Okay.
So you y'all take Labor Day off and just breathe. And there will just not be a lot on this ballot, but it is a very, very important ballot because all politics are local. Okay. The two running head to head to be Nashville's next mayor. On there as well as the council at large. There's eight, but we're only going to get four. So half will be gone. The other half will stay. And the council districts, 2, 7, 13, 16, 21, 23, 26, and 30. So if you're in any other district other than those, you will not see your district on the ballot.
Okay.
Let's see. So the eight are, just right quick, Berkeley Allen, Fabian Bedney, Steve Glover, Sharon Hurt, Howard Jones, Gary Moore, Zulfat Sara, and I may be pronouncing that wrong, Sherry Wiener. So four of them will be going on. And four of them will be going by the wayside.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And a couple other races here in the neighborhood. The District 21 race, Ed Kendall is taking on Brandon Taylor in the District 1. And, you know, Mr. Kendall's been up here on the show a couple
times.
Yes, he
has.
And the council district number 2, which is not that far from us, DaCosta Hastings and Kiznate, I guess that's correct, Kiznate Toombs, those two are going up head-to-head. So those are the districts that are the closest right around us here in this particular area. So we'll have to see how that turns out for them. And as always, may the best persons win and represent your people well when that day comes. And then, of course, you know, we're all looking forward to casting our ballots next year. We can hardly wait. we can hardly wait, Lord. So after this election is over, all of you all that are eligible to and registered and aren't, please go in caravans and go register to vote. Caravans. Just go in mass and no excuses, no amnesia, no I didn't know and I didn't know. There are no excuses. Can't take no more. We simply must vote. And it's so crucial this time. It's for real, for real. I knew, may I say this, and then we're going to, you know, I just have to dip into this. And just, you know, sometimes stuff just, I just want to scream when I see, you know, a steady stream of lies and craziness.
Oh, boy.
I'm just like, oh, Lord. You get a headache from it.
Yeah.
I knew the moment the president said he was going to do something about gun control.
That it wasn't going to last?
He was, background checks, he was lying.
Yeah.
I knew it. I'm like, y'all, please don't fall for this. Please do not fall for this. I mean, this is the same old, you know, tap dancing, escorting on the stage that he does all the time. I was like, oh, Lord, here we go. Wasting people's time.
Whatever camera's pointed that way, whatever's good for the moment is what he says.
Just wasting people's time. You know you're not going to do this, particularly when he had, for one of his first acts as president, was repealing the background checks bill for mentally ill people. So now if mental illness is at the crux of all this, then why would that be the first thing you did when you sat in the chair? So it just seems kind of, you know, like it's a giant lie. Oh, there's no question the NRA is paying him and everybody connected to him. So, but I'm, you know, at the end of the day, the NRA should feel a sense of responsibility to these folks who are losing their loved ones left and right, while they are denying that there's a problem. And it's just so amazing that how the folks that feel that this country doesn't have a problem, and there's a large percentage of people in our nation that really want to see change come, that are on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, some common sense reform.
But they don't have not been able to convince the Senate.
Moscow Mitch.
Yeah, and his friends that this is an issue that America is begging and screaming and hollering for. So if you don't do what we ask you to do, the question then becomes, why are you there? And find something else to do. Go back to the bluegrass state. I mean, do something, but give us people that are going to respond to us, either that or just resign. I mean, because you're just...
Yeah, you're already filthy rich. Why, you know?
But I mean, if you're not going to do the job that you were elected to do and represent this nation and the people in it, then what is the purpose of being there in the first place? You've already... If you got the dough, it's about dough, then you got it. Bye. Bye. Let them get somebody from that state who can represent and gives a doggone about the citizens of this country, because it does feel like we're almost on our own when it comes to certain things. You want to buy an island?
An island?
Huh?
Depends on where it's at.
It's not in the S-hole nation. Okay.
Oh.
Because he ain't buying nothing dark. oh, Lord. I just, you know, it just swings from one end of utter insanity to the next. But for some people, they cool with that. Cool with the craziness. Not me. It's like, you know, stop this train. Everybody's almost, we're almost insane from it. And maybe that's the goal of the project.
Well, you know, he's the chosen one.
Who chose him? Down below or up above?
You know, the word is that he was sent by God just for the Jewish people, for the second coming of Christ.
Okay.
That's what they're saying.
That's what they're saying,
yeah.
Okay. So obviously, I don't know what book of scripture they're quoting that from. The book of It Ain't Happening. Anyway, I tell you what is happening. I heard you in your other report, Chuck, maybe last hour, when you were talking about West End. And you know, that's not that far from us. So, I know West End gets pretty stacked. I heard you also talking about 24. Have they moved out of the way since then? Or are they still stacked?
I wish I could give you good, you know, good news. I'm the bearer of bad news, right, when you hear my voice. That's
know,
for sure.
But you know, it's always good to hear it, regardless. I mean, you know.
Chuck. So thanks, Sharon. Right now, we're looking at a multi-vehicle crash. They've got it down to two lanes here on, guess where, 40 East, just before you get to the airport. I mean, I'm looking at this live right now, and traffic's just at a major crawl here, trying to get out towards the airport from downtown here on 40 Eastbound. Again, just past Fessler's. Is at a major crawl, and that's really like one of the worst places possible to have a wreck in the afternoon. I'm looking at the fire department. They've got the fire engine turned sideways here, trying to block traffic to keep all the motorists off this accident here. Again, it's 40 East here. Again, as you head out towards the airport on this big delay, Bell Road at Benzinger Road, that wreck just happened. Bradley Parkway at Keaton, a two-car crash. Murfreesboro Pike at Donaldson Pike was tied up a few minutes ago on a two-car collision at that location. This traffic report is brought to you by Princess Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike in South Nashville. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
It's our 13th annual countdown to kickoff. Here on From the Press Box to Press Row, I'm Donald Ware. Join me over the next couple of weeks as I get you set for the upcoming HBCU football season. You'll hear from some of the top players and coaches in the country. Plus, you'll hear from National Football League personnel as well. That's From the Press Box to Press Row's countdown to kickoff this week, right here on your favorite station. Catch the Box to Row show every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on Jazzy 88 WFSK.
September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Did you know African American men are more likely to develop and die from prostate cancer than any other population? Thanks to Astellas Pharma USA, Nashville General Hospital is pleased to offer no-cost prostate cancer screenings for men over 40. Call 615-391-4227 and make an appointment today. It could save your life. 615-341-4227. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK, Historic Fisk University, and What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance, and also brought to you by a new sponsor who will be joining us on this show and on the station, Nashville General Hospital at Meharry. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. Now, I said at the top of the hour, I was very much looking forward to this book and this topic and this guest because Lord knows it strikes a lot of chords with people, especially people who have been deceived by somebody. Let me introduce Jill Elaine Hastay. She is a distinguished McKnight University professor and the Centennial Professor of Law at the University of Minnesota Law School. So we're happy to have the author of the new book, Intimate Lies and the Law. How are you this afternoon?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. I bet your phone rings all the time on this subject, huh?
Well, what's been great about working on the book and having it out is that this is a topic you can talk to anyone about.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone has had either the experience of intimate deception or they've mm-hmm. gossiped about it in someone else's life.
Yeah, definitely. And all ages of people too, right?
Oh, yes, yes. All parts of the life cycle.
Yeah. Now, as I begin to talk about the book, I just want to, now where is University in what city?
University of Minnesota is in Minneapolis.
Oh. Are you all still experiencing the heat like the rest of us?
Well, it's all relative. Today's a pretty hot day, but I'm pretty confident that Nashville is significantly hotter.
Oh, yes. Most definitely. Most definitely. And you all get significantly colder than we do, so.
Yes, that's the payoff, yeah. Right? February is the payoff for Nashville and the price for Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Anyway, intimacy and deception are often entangled. People deceive to lure someone into a relationship or to keep her there, to drain an intimate's bank account, or to use her to acquire government benefits, to control an intimate, or to resist domination, or to capture myriad other advantages. So, in the work that you've done, what made you go in this direction? Is this your expertise at the university?
Well, I want to start by clarifying that my own life did not inspire me to write this book. The dedication is to my loved ones. You didn't inspire me to write the book. Instead, I have taught and written about family law for 20 years,
uh-huh.
and I would occasionally come across cases where someone deceived an intimate and inflicted just enormous damage and got away with it because courts said, well, we don't provide remedies for intimate deception. And that always struck me as very interesting, and I kept it in mind as something I wanted to go back to.
Hmm. Well, and you know, I was going to ask you, is this a tale of your own personal life? I'm glad you cleared that up for me.
Yep.
I bet you get that question all the time.
I do. I think it might be more exciting if it was my own personal, but instead I have, 10,000 other stories.
Oh, and you have them in the book. Now, do you find in the research you did for this topic and also through working with clients that it's mostly men who are deceiving women, or are women deceiving men?
Oh, well, I think a lot of people have the assumption that men are more likely to deceive women mm-hmm. than vice versa. I think that is a strong assumption. There isn't any systematic evidence that would support it. Mm-hmm. In my own view, it depends on what kind of deception, because people generally deceive about what matters to mm-hmm. them. So, mm-hmm. for instance, my own intuition is that men are probably more likely to deceive to overstate their income because that tends to be more important to men in the mm-hmm. dating market mm-hmm. than to women. But then, of course, there's some deception that's unique to women, like fake pregnancy and sort of, lies about paternity.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you can say it's one group. Everyone, the sad truth of the book is that, I'm not saying everyone deceives, but intimate deception is very widespread.
And this was, has it gotten worse since the internet? Or I know deception's been around since the beginning of time, but.
Yeah, deception's been around since the beginning of time. I think the internet can change the forms.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the way you get away with deceiving someone is they actually don't know you very well. You're not in the same small town. You're interacting with them. You're meeting them over the internet. They don't have the same ways of checking up on
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, sometimes the internet can give people a way to do research and investigate, find out things that would have been harder to find out when all the public records are in dusty
mm-hmm.
county archives.
Yeah.
But deception is a constant, and people, so people deceived using the Pony Express, people deceived using the internet.
Okay. It seems much faster now than the Pony Express.
Yeah, it's easier. Yeah, it's certainly easier. And the other thing I'll say about that is one thing that's interesting is so courts don't want to give a remedy for intimate deception, but they're also very willing to declare people intimates when they actually don't know each other very well.
Right.
So
why is that?
I don't know exactly, but I mean, I have a case where this woman meets this man on an internet chat room, and over 2 years, they exchange emails and photographs and phone calls, mm-hmm. and it turns out he doesn't exist. According to the woman who's deceived, it's a figment of this other woman's imagination, just designed to manipulate her and also to get, like, $10,000 in gifts.
Mm.
And the Illinois Supreme Court says, this is intimate deception, we don't give a remedy. So there's two things that are interesting here. One is the idea that intimates can't access ordinary remedies that the law makes available.
Mm-hmm.
But also, courts adopt very sweeping definitions of intimacy. It's sort of like they're looking for any excuse to call a relationship intimate.
So now the intimacy, if there is no intercourse or anything like that, like if you're close, is how, what?
You don't, so certainly if you've dated or you've had sex one time, you'll definitely be considered an intimate.
Mm-hmm.
But even, it's not necessary. Courts kind of, if you can be in any way described as a romantic or sexual partner, courts mm-hmm. are willing to call you an intimate. The book also covers, in addition to sort of romance and sex, I also talk about deception among family members, like mm-hmm. parents and children and siblings.
Okay, well, let me start with, in your chapter one, when you simply are answering or explaining in this chapter, why do people do this? Because they're selfish and greedy and they don't care? Or is there another reason why they're doing this?
Well, you captured a lot of it. I mean, the simple answer to deception is that people can capture just tremendous advantages by deceiving their intimates,
mm-hmm.
and many people just can't resist the temptation. So one reason people deceive is because otherwise they won't be able to have a relationship. So you hide that you're having an affair, or you hide that you've been in jail, or whatever matters to the person at the time, because otherwise you feel like you won't have a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you deceive because that's your way to get benefits that wouldn't otherwise be available. So mm-hmm. you pretend to be in love with someone because you want to have a chance to legally mm-hmm. immigrate. You're not a citizen, they are.
Right.
Or you deceive just to manipulate someone and control them, control their decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you deceive because you have so little power. So, for instance, I talk in the book about stay-at-home wives whose husbands won't give them any cash. What do? They're lying day and night. You know, they're overstating how much the groceries cost. They're
right.
selling furniture because that's their only way to get money.
Wow. Oh, Lord, I've got to work. I got to have my own. I don't know if I could sit at home and be taken. No.
Well, you are very vulnerable, right? These women, they're deceiving because they have so little power. You know, they're very vulnerable.
Okay, so these are also the folks that you're talking about are also, are they just weak or they just don't know anything?
Well, I mean, deceivers tend to be very good at rationalizing their
okay.
behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So they tell themselves that the person is better off not knowing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just upset them,
mm-hmm.
you know. And actually, in my book, I'm not interested in examples of deception where even the deceived person would think it was in your interest. So I say in the book, if you want to tell me you love my book and thought it was super interesting, I'm happy for you to lie to me.
Okay.
You know, that's in my interest.
Okay.
But often the person who was deceived doesn't agree. They wanted to know, you know, about your hidden gambling addiction or your infidelity. You know, they don't want to be in blissful ignorance.
Yeah, yeah. Now on page 43 is your book handy, Jill?
I'll pull it up right now.
Okay. On page 43, you are describing a scenario with a woman interviewed for your book that called herself a maid with a jaguar.
Right.
What's the story behind that?
Okay. So the maid with the jaguar, she is a stay-at-home wife, and she's married to a very wealthy man,
mm-hmm.
but he basically won't give her any access to cash. So the way she understands herself is her whole lifestyle depends on staying with her husband and doing what he wants, and she can't make any independent decisions. She feels like she's his servant. And the reason she's in my book is because she responds by overstating the utilities bills. You know, he lets her pay the electric bill, so
mm-hmm.
she starts saying, oh, we're paying this bill all the time, when really only one of those is going to the electric company and she's pocketing
mm-hmm.
The others. I think similarly, there's a lot of deception in domestic violence cases. Both mm-hmm. batterers tend to deceive, but also victims, of course, they're lying all the time to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the many bad consequences of inequality is that it promotes, you know, lying and other kinds of deception.
Yeah. Now, on 46, you talk about parents that have deceived their children about their religious, racial, or ethnic background to shield them. That is so crazy to me. That's another thing. I'm probably going to say that a bunch. Because I'm a straight shooter. I don't have time for foolishness. Life is way too short. So is how hard would this be in the courtroom? Because is that the same with the intimacy laws?
I haven't found cases where a child is suing the parent for lying about their race. The cases that have arisen are mainly from sort of before Brown v. Board of Education, and are basically about white people suing, and the claim is, you deceive me into marrying you or becoming engaged to you by pretending to be white when you're not really.
Mm-hmm.
That was the claim. And this is an interesting, there's so many things going on, but courts basically, after the first half of the 20th century, just refused to accept these claims because they say this would just be giving way to racial prejudice and saying there's something wrong with this person not being white. So it's an interesting example of some claims. There never have been that much judicial support for intimate deception claims, but some have actually gone away. And one reason is because just the values they embodied no longer resonate in the same way with the legal system.
And you also give an example in here of a ethnicity or ethnic background scenario. Brando Skyhorse?
Oh, right. So Brando Skyhorse, who wrote a memoir, is one of the driving forces of the memoir is that his parents are both from Mexico and they immigrate to the United States. Mm-hmm. His father is kind of out of the picture. And then his mother decides to present herself as an American Indian on the theory that there's less discrimination against American Indians than Mexicans. Mm-hmm. The reason I talk about these examples is just what people deceive about isn't disconnected from what's going on in society, right? Okay. What matters to people, what's important, is all against the background of what are society's values. You know, there's a reason people lie to say they have more money,
right?
Or they have more, status. It's all what society cares about, and as that changes, like hopefully we're moving to a racially just society. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. But if we are, you would expect there would be less deception over race.
Definitely.
Because it would matter less, you know?
Right. Well, I do know that back in the day, and I don't know if it still happens today, but some black people that used to pass for white, for an advantage not to be treated like a black person, but to be more accepted because of the lightness of their skin color. And that was like 40, 50 years ago. There's maybe still some folk out there trying to do it now. But that deception is for something entirely different.
For jobs. Although sometimes, one of the things the book talks about is sometimes one reason people are deceiving the closest people to them is because they're trying to maintain a deception outside.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're presenting yourself as white to get a job and to avoid employment discrimination, you can see how if you don't present as white with your, dates, it could be a source, that person will know and could reveal it or it could come out somehow. Also, another, tragedy of these passing cases is often to kind of get away with it, people would sort of separate themselves from their families.
Right.
Again, because they were afraid of the secret coming out. So although the book is really focused on deception of intimates, it often is intertwined with deception of other people like employers.
Yeah. Well, I guess that fabric of that person, behavior, thought patterns, thought words and deeds type of thing, it just runs through everything that they do all the time. This is almost a sickness, right?
I mean, well, I guess two things. So one is, what's interesting is that a lot of the people in my book, they don't just lie about one thing. They lie about so many things or everything.
Right.
So for many people, if you're perpetuating a big deception, that's your standard MO. The other thing I want to say, though, is I don't think that everyone who deceives their intimates is crazy or certifiable or insane. You know, it's just too common to say all these people are just crazy.
Yeah.
They do things that are unfortunate and cause a lot of injury, but But I don't think they're all crazy.
And some people are just maybe don't want to work and just lazy.
Well, right, again, deception is a way of getting what you want, often in the easiest way possible.
Yeah.
Right? So you say what you need to say to trick someone into supporting you.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So it has a lot. So you can see why it's so common, because it can really help the person who's deceiving.
Well, and plus, if the law hasn't caught up with that and there's no punishment for it, then what's to keep folks from doing it?
Right. So in general, there's no remedies for deceiving your intimate, and that only adds to the incentives. You know, most people are not going to fear. They're not going to have legal consequences.
So they just, you know, so there's no deterrent to this crime.
Right. I mean, it's not a crime, but yeah, the law doesn't create deterrence. In fact, sometimes
if I get all my money stolen from somebody, and they have lied to me in a relationship, to me, that's a crime. Okay, it might not be on the books, but you know, that's
yeah, like, it's certainly a wrong. And yeah. I mean, and the general thrust of my book is to say, if you would otherwise have a suit you could bring, the mere fact that you were deceived by an intimate shouldn't stop you. So if you could otherwise sue someone for deceit or battery or misrepresentation or whatever, you should be able to bring the same claim even if you were deceived by an intimate. So if someone stole your money, you'd be able to sue them. You should still be able to sue them even if the court thinks you're intimates.
Excellent. Now let's take a break and let the audience know if you have a question or comment. Because this is a serious subject, and you can't be saying, I didn't know. No, you know now. I didn't know. We got you. The number is 615-329-8810. 615-329-8810. The book for this hour is Intimate Lies and the Law. That looks like there's a lot of protection for you out there. 615-329-8810. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. It's picked up quite a bit now here, trying to get off out of downtown on the South Loop here, I-40 at Broadway. Traffic's busy now already on 65 as you make your way south of town down into Williamson County. Wreck getting some attention there on 40 eastbound near Fessler's. It's so heavy now. 40 east trying to head out past the airport. This traffic report is brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, located 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
It's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Hello, Nashville. Coming up Sunday morning at 7, news headlines and issues of the day. Then at 8 o'clock, the discussion is on stepping out of spiritual circles, living in your present as part of your Christian journey. My guest is Father Albert Haas. He's chaplain at Cedar Break Catholic Retreat in Texas, a spiritual advisor and author. Your questions and comments are always welcome.
That's What's the 411 with Sharon Kay every Sunday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and every Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88 WFSK.
September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Did you know African American men are more likely to develop and die from prostate cancer than any other population? Thanks to Astellas Pharma USA, Nashville General Hospital is pleased to offer no-cost prostate cancer screenings for men over 40. Call 615-391-4227 and make an appointment today. It could save your life. 615-341-4227. Tune in on Thursdays to hear WFSK's Artist of the Week. You can win some brand new music and stay up on the latest smooth and contemporary jazz releases. This week's Artist of the Week is saxophonist Steve Cole. His latest release is entitled Gratitude. Don't miss the WFSK Feature Artist of the Week during the noon hour on Thursdays to hear some prime cuts, an interview with the Artist of the Week, and win some brand new releases right here on Jazzy 88, Nashville's Jazz Station. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University, and it is just another hot, steamy summer day in the city. We do have chances for rain for the rest of this week, about 20 for this afternoon, although I think you'll be able to get to wherever you're going this afternoon without having to deal with any rain. It increases to about 30% for tonight, and by tomorrow we're up to 50 and 60%. So the next several days looks like back-to-back rain, and the temp will come down just ever so slightly, though. It's still going to be steamy and humid out there. We're expecting 93, but we have exceeded that, or expecting 96, rather, and we're not exceeding, but we're close. We're awfully, awfully close to 96 at 93. Degrees here in the city, and tonight it's looking like 73, but it has truly, truly been a hot summer in this part of the country for sure. I know many of you out there are looking forward to fall and the crisp air that will follow. Now, today's book, Intimate Lies and the Law. And if you've ever been through any kind of situation involving deception and it was a person you were intimate with and you lost things, you know that hurt. You know it did. Suppose you discover that an intimate has deceived you and inflicted severe, even life-altering financial, physical, or emotional harm. After the initial shock and sadness, you might wonder whether the law will help you secure redress. Well, that's why we have the guest on here, an author, and that is Jill Elaine Hasday, because she has studied this for so very long. And I don't know if I've seen a book like this written by other people before. Jill?
No, this is the first book. I mean, one thing that's really interesting is that everyone knows about deception in intimate relationships, mm-hmm. but people haven't focused on it as a area to think about, especially instead of just like one particular kind of mm-hmm. lie, you know, mm-hmm. all of them together and what happens if you go to court. So I call it in the book, it's like a legal field hidden in plain sight. Mm-hmm. I think in part because people haven't looked at it because it can be kind of depressing, you know, although some of these stories, if it's not you and you know what's going to happen, are both mm-hmm. kind of funny and sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I guess there's no, if you've been deceived, you're just on your own.
In general, most people lose. There's a few cases where courts are more receptive. So, for instance, if you were deceived mm-hmm. and as a consequence got an STD, a sexually transmitted disease, mm-hmm. courts are willing to give you a remedy, but they really stress the reason we're giving you a remedy is not that we care about deception in intimate relations, it's more that there's a public health problem here and we want to, you know, discourage the spread of STDs. Mm-hmm. So there'll be these little categories they carve out, but in general, they're extremely hostile to these claims.
Do you hope, or as you were, you know, doing the interviews and the research for this, that it would change in the legal system?
Yeah, I mean, I have a few proposals. One thing is, I think courts should just start with the assumption that they're going to treat deception cases the same, whether or not the person is mm-hmm. an intimate. So if you could go against a stranger for stealing your money or inflicting physical harm or causing you emotional injury, you should be able to bring the same legal claims and present the same evidence, even if your deceiver was an intimate. Mm-hmm. But I also think the law can do more to help people before a lawsuit is filed. Mm-hmm. Most people are never going to sue, mm-hmm. even if their prospects in court improve. You know, litigation is very expensive. Mm-hmm. It only makes sense to sue someone who actually has the money to pay a judgment. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, intimate deception, it tends to cause less harm if you can discover it sooner rather than later. So I think the law should look for opportunities to help people discover whether they're being deceived, if they can do it without unduly infringing on privacy or security. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, one of my proposals is, right now, every state has public records on marriages and divorces and bigamy convictions, but they're not coordinated. States could coordinate, and it could be easier to check whether your date or your fiancé is as unmarried as he claims. Mm-hmm. That's a very common kind of deception. It's very hard to actually mm-hmm. investigate. Or also, this, I think the law should look for opportunities to stop deceptive people from carrying out their plans. So right now, there's remarkably little protection if your spouse decides to basically get, you know, pocket joint assets for his own purposes, you know, give them to his girlfriend or squander them as he sees fit. So I think that law should also look for opportunities to just make it harder to take joint assets without the other person's knowledge.
Now, in Chapter 2, would you, simply by the way, the first sentence that you started with, would there be some help in here, you know, so people can know what to avoid? Are you giving tips in this one? Because you write, while intimate deception can benefit deceivers enormously, deceivers usually cannot obtain those benefits unless they manage to dupe their targets. So is there some help us in here?
yeah. So, I mean, I want to say two things. So first is, if you've been deceived, one of the messages I want to give you is you're not alone and it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. It's very easy in retrospect for someone to say you should have investigated, et cetera, but it's hard to detect deception. And our society tells us to trust our intimates and not investigate them. Mm-hmm. Investigating them often jeopardizes the relationship because the person finds out about it. So I don't want to blame people if they are deceived. But yes, the book talks about ways to investigate and discover. There are a lot of public records available. They're not perfect, but there are things you can look at, like marriage and divorce records and criminal records. Again, it won't be perfect, but especially for someone who hasn't moved around too much, it's more likely. There are also services on the internet. Unfortunately, you have to pay a little bit, but that can do things like look up what's the address associated with this phone number, what's the phone number associated with this address. Uh-huh. So especially if someone is presenting themselves as a wholly different person, you can often use the internet to figure that out.
So that's, I guess it's the moral of the story is run a background check on everybody you go out with or something.
I mean, I think there's a way in which I don't want, it would be sad if every time someone said you love them, you respond with, oh, you must be lying, I have to hire an investigator to figure it out. But if someone wants to investigate, I wouldn't stop them. I just think that realistically, most people aren't going to investigate, and it's not fair to say, to put the burden on you should have investigated rather than to say, no, the fault lies with the person who is deceptive.
Well, I tell you what, nowadays you just can't be too careful. You just really cannot. And now I know that you probably address the internet and what to watch out for and what not to fall for. What would you advise anybody listening now?
Well, deceivers often will pretend to have a very glamorous job that also lets them move around a lot. Mm-hmm. So they'll pretend to be airline pilots. You know, that's why they're out of town so often. Mm-hmm. A lot of men pretend to be Navy SEALs. I think at any one time there's more men pretending to be Navy SEALs than have served in the SEALs in its whole existence, you know. If you never have an opportunity to meet the person's friends or other associates, that might be a source of suspicion. Hmm. And also, of course, if like someone asks you for money, especially if you haven't met them, you know, there's a whole industry of romance scams where people basically try to lure you in to get money for them, to give them money, to give them gift cards, or sometimes to do what sound like favors, but basically they're making you their money launderer. So I would be very, if you haven't met the person, you should not be sending them money. Just full stop.
Okay. Now, so how does that work if it, when it comes to intimacy and sexually transmitted diseases, is it the same?
Oh, so if you have got, if you have actually gotten STD from someone who lied to you, who said, who denied they had an STD, or who didn't tell you about their STD because they didn't want you, they wanted you to think they weren't infected, courts are willing to give remedies. You still have to prove your case in court. You know, you still have to prove that you were deceived, the person knew they had a disease and they hid it. But you can get a remedy for that. If it's anything less than that clear-cut case, though, courts are pretty hostile. So, for instance, most courts reject claims where the person says, you lied and hid that you had an STD, and so I found out and I was really scared, but then the test showed I didn't have it. There, generally, courts aren't willing to give you remedies just for that anxiety. You actually have to have gotten the infection.
So if you do get HIV or AIDS from someone
who lied to you about, who knew they had it and lied to you about it, yes, courts will give you a remedy for that.
Okay.
So, but keep in mind, the person, that's better than nothing, but still the person has to have the money to pay you.
True. Well, is that is that criminal behavior? Would that be considered?
Actually, many states have made that criminal behavior, so that there might be criminal liability there. But in terms of one of the general limitations of the civil system, just regardless of my book, is that it only makes sense to sue if you can pay the lawyer, and the lawyer is only willing to help you if you both have a good case, but also the person who's injured you has the money to pay.
Okay, let's go to the phone, get a question or comment. Pat, thank you for holding. What's on your mind today?
Yes. I want to know if deception is fraud. And I also want to know, is there a national federal law against deception? And again, I want to know if deception, if that is like fraud. And I'll take the answer off there.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what when people say fraud, it often involves deception. So deception just means intentional conduct designed to make the other person think something you don't think is true. So you can deceive by lying. I know I'm saying something false and I'm trying to convince you it's true. You can also deceive by intentionally not saying something because you want the person to come to the wrong conclusion. So just to do the adultery example, you can lie and say, I'm not seeing her. But you could also just hide the fact that you're seeing someone else as a way of having your girlfriend or boyfriend come to the wrong conclusion that you're faithful. So fraud often involves lies and intentionally not saying something. There's no, in the intimate context, there's no national prohibitions on fraud. One of the interesting differences that I'm talking about in the book is that in general, the law is pretty hostile to fraud and to deception in the business context, but then when you get into the intimate context, it just doesn't care, even though intimate deception can also cause, say, financial injury.
So I guess the assumption is you should have known better.
Right, but what's interesting is caveat emptor, which means, you know, buyer beware, has really fallen out of favor in the commercial arena. Now if you dupe someone, into giving you your email because you're running some Ponzi scheme, they don't say, oh, the person should have known better. They said, no, you're preying on the vulnerable.
Right. And, of course, there's always a Tennessee connection. I guess in Chapter 7 on page 180 and 81, you talk about the Tennessee Court of Appeals. What's this all about?
Hold on. Let me look it up. Oh, okay. So I also talk in the book about family members deceiving each other. So this is it. And one of the interesting things is that if a child deceives their parent, courts actually are very harsh on the child. But if a parent deceives their child, courts are very forgiving, even when the parent deceived, even when the parent deceived an adult child, who's, and adult children aren't under their parents' legal control anymore. So the Tennessee case I talk about is this woman, young woman, she was in a car accident when she was about 18. She got very injured. She spent 2 years recuperating in her parents' house. She gets this $63,000 settlement from the driver of the car, and her father basically takes, or she alleges takes, tens of thousands of that money. And eventually, you know, she trusts her father, of course. She doesn't realize, but eventually she realizes it, and the court just says, no, you know, we don't care. We don't care. Too much time has passed. You don't have a remedy. And one thing I think is interesting about that is generally the law wants children to trust their parents. But in this context, where children trust parents who turn out to be deceptive, courts are very unwilling to give a remedy. You know, it's your fault. You should have demanded a formal accounting. I mean, it's just unrealistic. She's 20 years old. She's just been in, like, in her parents' house recuperating for 2 years. She's going to say, I want a formal accounting? It's just not realistic.
No, it's not. That's a terrible pair. Wow, that's deep.
Yes, there's many bad people in this book.
No kidding. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you wrote the book and brought this up, because I didn't realize there was no protection. You know, I mean, I just assumed it would be. But this is good information, Jill. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And if you're interested, more information about my book is available on my website.
Okay.
Which is Jill Hasday, J-I-L-L. H-A-S as in Sam, D as in David, A-Y.com.
Intimate Lies and the Law. Jill, thank you so much. And hopefully some things will change. And if they do, you keep us posted, okay?
I will. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Well, that's a lot to think about right there. So, you know, be careful at all times who you're messing with. At all times. Anyway, let's take our news break, and then we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.